HanselMinutes.com. It's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 212, recorded live Thursday, April 22nd, 2010. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik R80 Controls, the most comprehensive suite of components for Windows Forms and ASP.NET web applications. Online at www.telerik.com. In this episode, Scott talks podcasting with Joel Spolsky.
Welcome to another excruciating episode of the Stack Overflow podcast. Friday. This time,
I guess that's our opening.
I didn't even tell Jeff Atwood that the show was going to happen. That was the first attempt at an improvement, but I'm still here.
Well, Jeff was on the show last week.
Was he?
He was. I know that you really listened to my podcast, religiously. So you noticed, of course, that Jeff was on
the
show.
I just have delay with how long it takes them to get onto my iPhone because I can only plug it in at work once a week or so. So I'm still listening to the lady that's in charge of the Win Twitter account.
That is incredibly, wow. That was like a year and a half ago.
Yeah. And that was an amazing episode. Let me tell you.
She's pretty cool.
If I hang up the phone, what will happen?
With this podcast that we're having right now, then
if I hang up the regular phone.
If you hang up the phone, then I won't have a backing track and I won't be able to record you, and that's how podcasting works.
But you're gonna get a recording sent to you. All right, never mind. I'm just gonna try to. What if I hold the phone like this, or I'm gonna switch it to speakerphone. That's what I'm gonna do.
So what Joel is talking about is that Joel and I are recording this very special episode of Hansel Minute, and we're doing
the Stack Overflow podcast
and the Stack Overflow podcast. Because the problem is that Joel is on a Skype call, and I really don't like Skype calls.
Yeah, well, Scott refused to do Skype and wants me to use the plain old telephone service that makes beautiful audio.
So you just put the phone down.
Yeah, but you can still hear me, right?
I'm hearing you through Skype, though. But see, the phone is on this line. I need the phone for a backing track.
But you should be hearing me through the speakerphone.
I got the phone on speakerphone. Okay, yeah, that's probably adequate. It's my sound guy that's going to worry about it. So
because I'm going to give you a beautiful MP3
Joel, I understand
wave
that you'll give me, I would like a wave
voice.
File. But the issue is, Joel, that I need a third track with both of our voices so that I can line them up.
Yeah, you only have to line them up once, though, right? Is
no,
that true? Actually,
it's not true, Joel. Because
they get out of sync.
Yeah, it's
every 10 minutes. Well, here's what we'll do: we'll clap. Right, and then that clap will be on both tracks. You line up the claps.
So let's talk about the differences in sound quality between the Stack Overflow podcast and the Hansel Minutes podcast, brought to you by NPR.
Yeah, yours sounds great when you have those little tutti frutti microphone thingies that you have there, and you have people live. You're sitting in the Wynn hotel lobby somewhere talking to some person who does Twitter. But mine works great when you have remote people, or it works as well as anything compared to the quality of a POTS phone conversation, which just sounds like AM.
Well,
radio,
yeah.
And angry people late at night.
That is
in.
The issue. There is a, but Skype, I tell you, it sounds like a great idea, but you can tell when you're listening to a podcast that was recorded on Skype. And there's
many
variables.
Compared to the actual being there. Now, what this podcast will be by the time people listen to it will be a slightly unsynchronized collection of two MP3 files that were, or whatever, you know,
three-way files.
Digital. Three. But what's the third one is doesn't have any sound that we need. We need your voice from your WAV file and my voice from my WAV file.
All right, let's do this.
And then
explain
the third one
to
just
me.
Helps the audio engineer line it up.
Let's do it this way. Explain to me how you guys record your podcast. Give me the technical stuff and then we'll break down the technical stuff of our podcast.
Okay. So here's how we record our podcast. I have I got this headset and this is going into a mixer over here. And then I've got one computer for every, this is interesting, one computer for every participant. Usually it's just at Jeff, but if we have a guest, I'll have two computers. And I think I've done it once with three computers. And then what I have to do is each of these computers has a separate Skype conversation with people. Now, Skype does have conference calling, but I don't use the conference calling capability of Skype because it tries to half duplex or whatever that feature is to prevent feedback. So what I have to do is have an individual conversation with people on Skype on each computer, and then each computer has a sound card. I'm using these external M Audio Pro things that are connected via USB. And Those each feed their sound into a big old mixer, and the mixer mixes it, and it creates multiple aux outs, which are what the sound engineers call mix minus. Is that the word? Mix minus, I think. So the idea is that if I'm having a call with Scott and Jeff, then Jeff needs to hear my voice and Scott's voice, but he can't hear his voice because that will confuse him. So I have a mixer that has the capability of taking everybody but Jeff and feeding that back to Jeff, and taking everybody but Scott and feeding that back to Scott, and letting me hear everybody in my headsets. And then that all goes into a digital recorder that records everybody on an individual track. So I got a 4-track digital recorder, which is a standalone Eteral device. I could turn around my camera and show it to you, Scott, but the audience won't see it. And it's a standalone digital recorder that records each of the channels. And so then I can go back and in post-production, what I do is on each channel, I do individual noise reduction because different people have different noise profiles depending on wherever they're sitting. And, and I remove snaps and hisses and pops and crackles and bad words. And sometimes what I do is I take a little snippet of Jeff laughing. Mm-hmm. Usually it's something he's reading on the internet, and I move it after one of the jokes that I told. So it sounds like he's laughing.
Do you really do that?
I have to.
So I should probably laugh just in case.
Give me some laugh.
That was great, Joel.
No, that was a bad laugh. That was a terrible laugh.
I know it was. That was called insincerity.
But I don't really want to talk about the technology of the podcast, this being a podcast on podcasting. What I want to do is talk about the contents, because I think that we just got a little bit bored with the Stack Overflow podcast. We were kind of repeating ourselves. The audience hasn't grown for about a year. We sort of rapidly ascended to about 40,000. And then kind of got stuck there, and I'm hearing a lot of that from
how do you measure
classes
that?
Of podcasters.
How do you measure that?
I have no idea. This is one of the problems with IT conversations: is that if I ask them, they'll tell me, but they have to go dig into something. There's no like
right. But what I'm saying is that it's been a big problem for us to figure out how many people are listening, because a download doesn't mean a listen.
Okay,
and a download doesn't cover that someone maybe listened halfway, got sick of you, and then stopped listening. And a download doesn't tell you whether they shared it with their friends. Yeah. Because podcasts can't phone home.
They can't really. Yeah, it's not so easy to share a podcast with a friend, really.
We have lots and lots of people overseas, and I mean lots, who download the podcast, and then they copy it up to a share, and then the company listens to it.
You're kidding, really?
No, it's big, especially in Africa.
There's a worse problem with downloads, which is that I download all your podcasts, Scott, but I only listen to the ones with, that I can understand, like the Twitter lady from the hotel.
Right.
And then there are all these ones where it's like, we are the code ASP.net MVCGQRPLG dot code behind inversion of control container mega complex for SharePoint operating systems for Windows 7 mobile for Windows. Trademark.
And then you just hang up at that point. You just stop.
I never listened to that, but I did. I do download it because that's what iTunes does. It's just like, hey, feed me. Just keeps downloading.
I'm starting to tell maybe what your problem was. It's your podcast. Just a hunch.
What?
Maybe it's you, Joel.
I before we go any further, I have to warn you that just before I came in here, I had a great grain of rice that had a lot of like habanero pepper sauce on it, and it is lodged in my sinus cavity.
Wow.
I snorted it instead of eating it.
And so, I love that what you just said kind of proved the point that I just made. It's really on this very special episode of Cancel Minutes, Joel gets a habanero stuck in his sinus cavity.
Exactly. And really, at some point, there may be kind of explosive, like sneezing through my ears or something.
My goodness.
Got it.
So measuring has been a challenge. There are many ways to measure a podcast. There's what they call first byte, which means they started a download. Last byte, which means they ended the download. And then you can kind of treat it like a feed, like on Feedburner, where you can say, we think that there's a certain amount of reach beyond the downloads themselves. I think we estimate 10% reach, which means that somebody shared the podcast with somebody, whether they put it on a share somewhere or they reblogged it. We have a number of people who take our podcast, and you can find it elsewhere on the net.
Right.
And it's hard to measure these things.
Well, but the one thing that I think most people would say you probably can measure, even if you don't know how many people are listening to the beginning, the end, et cetera, is relative.
Yes, you can absolutely measure yes. whether or not a show was a good. And we also measure yeah. how many downloads we get over the what we call the catalog. So when we talk to advertisers, we usually tell them that this we get X downloads over the catalog, which means that your ad will kind of live forever. We have a little 30-second ad in the middle.
And that ad is that a part of the podcast or can that change?
No, what'll happen is then we'll find a pause in the middle of our conversation and then I will come out kind of like Ira Glass and I'll say
I know about that from another place in time.
Exactly.
But could it be an ad that was placed even after that podcast was recorded, like years later?
We haven't done that, but we could. We could go back into the catalog and then put in different ads, but no one's asked for that. And Telerik has been our guy for a year and a half.
Yeah, they don't seem to care.
Hey, man, somebody's got to pay for the bandwidth. It is expensive to run a podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
Plus Lawrence, the editor who answered the phone for you, Lawrence, and he does editing, and he's in the studio right now. Our recording process is different than your recording process.
Wait, you look like you're in a house.
So I'm in my house in Portland, Oregon.
That's not the studio.
This is not the studio, but
he's awesome
in an actual
studio,
right? He's in Newcastle, Connecticut. New Hampshire? Connecticut.
And does he have a direct feed of your... How's he getting your...
Okay.
You're just going to send him the audio.
Right.
After.
So I have an M-Audio MicroTrack 2496 little wave recorder here. I've got a studio mic stand deal with a spit filter and a pop filter. I've got a couple of fancy cardioid Audio Technica and Shure microphones.
Nice.
And I record 44 kilohertz wave locally. I never use MP3s because I don't want to make copies of copies. And then I call into a conference. I call into a special line for me, like a back line. And then you called into a conference line. And then each person calling into that conference line is an individual track. So you were talking about how you deal with different tracks.
Yeah.
We can have other people call into this conference line. And then each of those goes into a Telos in Connecticut. And then each of those goes down to a track, and then Lawrence does everything that you described. He does all the sound
cleaning up and making
cleaning
it
up
into
and
a
whatnot.
Real thing. Yeah.
Like, for example, I realized that my he's going to be mad at me, but I'll since this is a show about podcasting, I had my I had my level set to medium for the beginning part of the show, and then I realized I had to switch it back to high. So then somewhere in the middle of the show, my voice will go like this, and Lawrence will probably have to fix that, and then he'll call me later and tell me not to do that again.
Well, at least somebody listens to your show before it goes live.
So this is an interesting question, though. I mean, I always think about NPR as my goal. Like, if the show can sound like, This American Life or something like that, then that's success. But you guys just record a phone call and throw it up on the web. Right?
Yeah. There's two things to talk about. One is audio quality, which we are reasonably obsessed about, but I think Skype quality... What we're doing is also what Leo Laporte does. That's pretty much, it's the gold standard. It's not having two WAV files or everybody being there in a room.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're going to do a remote team thing, it's fine. I mean, you can listen to it on a headset. It sounds definitely better than phone.
I need to do some tests on that, because the thing is, Carl Franklin, who is my sponsor, he's the guy who owns the studio, hates Skype.
Well, maybe he hasn't listened to it lately.
And Skype, maybe it's come a long way, right? I mean, what is the audio quality over Skype? Over the phone, it's 8 kilohertz.
Yeah.
I think it's 16-bit 8 kilohertz. It's like you said, it's mono AM.
Yeah. Skype will go as high as it needs to, depending on how much bandwidth is available. So if you listen to my podcast with Jeff, I know people say that it sounds like Skype, but honestly, I cannot hear the difference between me and him in terms of audio quality. Sometimes he's better than I am because he's got a slightly superior microphone. And the way in which his microphone is superior is that this is a mic that's designed, I think, for sportscasters.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's trying to reduce ambient noise.
Mm-hmm.
And that means if I turn my face a little bit, it'll cut out really, really quickly, like it just did.
Right. But you have the mic really close to your face, though. That mic, I mean, I can hear.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm inside your mouth right now, Joel.
Right. And that's what Jeff sounds like to me. And when we record that, that's what it ends up sounding like. And, we both got high bandwidth Skype, and we never use Wi-Fi, and and when we do, it's a mistake, and it's a disaster. And we also,
Wi-Fi,
open all
what
the
do you
ports
mean
so that we have direct connections.
You mean POTS.
And huh?
You said we never use Wi-Fi.
Yeah, we never use Wi-Fi.
What do you mean Wi-Fi? Oh, you're saying that you always connect over the wire to a direct.
We always connect over the wire with Skype because Wi-Fi will drop out. You know, sometimes even for
well, see, and then this, I think this is more the issue rather than the issue about whether you use Skype or not. The issue is, do you have a decent mic and do you have a reliable connection? I was talking to John Skeet on one of the shows a while back, and I was trying to give him the list of all the things I want him to do. And the thing is that for a guest, sometimes it's just easier to say, just pick up the phone and call this number. And I will admit that that's – if he had an awesome mic and I had him buy one or I mailed him one or DHL'd him one. And
We just went to his office when we needed John Skeet as a guest. But in general
– isn't he in London?
It's a nice trip. No, we were there for dev days anyway. We'll just order what we know is a good USB headset for somebody. It's like $45, and we'll just order from them on Amazon and have it delivered to them, and then they'll plug in the USB, and we'll spend a little bit of time walking them through opening some ports. But sometimes it gets pretty bad. Like what'll happen? We've had some pretty bad shows where you're talking to people and they're like, "Yeah, I got the headset, the Skype, it's going to be awesome, it works really well," mm-hmm. and then they'll just open like a Mac laptop on Wi-Fi from a library somewhere.
Awesome.
I can't talk really too loud because it'll sound awful because, when you just open a laptop, you've got the microphone and the speaker and there's some kind of feedback cancellation going on.
It's funny that you say that because there's been a number of times when I've had people on the show and I had to think about like, what kind of guest is this? Like, is this an important guest? Is this like, a famous physicist? I'm not going to piss him off by giving him a to-do because some of these guys, you just want them to call in, do the show, and then they want to leave the green room and go get their gift basket. But if you give them a task, then but depending on their personalities, they're not interested in accomplishing your task.
They'll do. Yeah, I mean, the people we have are programmers. Like the people that everybody's favorite show was Steve Yegi, who's an absolutely hilarious programmer. We used to work for Amazon, now works for Google. Mm-hmm. And really, really smart, really, really well spoken, writes beautiful blog posts. And that was by far our favorite show. And he's, somebody like that. He's a programmer. He's happy to plug in whatever USB microphone you send him.
Yeah. Yeah. I just had a couple of times where I didn't I guess the more famous the guest is, the more, the more starstruck I get. And I don't want to my most famous guest.
Yeah. When we had Bill Gates on, I was like, "Bill, your microphone is just not working for me. You need to get off right bastard. Now, go to Staples and get a Plantronics." And he did it. Steve Jobs wouldn't, though.
I'm trying to think who my most famous guest. I've done 210 shows. Charles Petzold was pretty huge.
Oh, he'll put on him.
He's awesome, though. Dan Bricklin, inventor of the spreadsheet.
Dan Bricklin would like nothing more. I mean, we could.
Yeah,
get
I know.
Dan Bricklin
I'm looking for somebody who's
like
famous who
more
didn't.
Than talking about what the best headset is.
Yeah. Dan Bricklin, Dan Appleman, these are all programmers. I did have Michio Kaku on the show, the guy who invented string theory.
Oh.
And I definitely did not want to make him angry because at any point he could have just left and just set up.
And the universe would wink out.
I'm done. Exactly. That's exactly what would have happened. This guy's not famous, but he's awesome. I had the guy that invented the Wildcat VBS.
Oh, yeah.
And,
I like that episode.
Mary Jo Foley. Mary Jo Foley was on. She's the lady who is on Microsoft.
All about Microsoft.
It was really kind of sobering because it made the difference between a technologist and a journalist became clear. Because we were talking about Windows 7 and she was running Windows XP. So she covered it from a journalistic perspective, but she didn't actually have it. So that was
One thing I've noticed about Mary Jo over the years is she knows more about Microsoft than anybody, mm-hmm. But she still doesn't really have the understanding of the technology. Like she can tell you what other people have said about
I think that's journalism though, right? Isn't it?
I think so. You know, there's a different class of journalist, which are like the John C. Dvorak and the Leo who shall remain nameless, who, actually do get the technology, I think, more than she does.
Well, they don't get the technology that much. Oh, here's one. Tim Bray.
No, Leo Laporte. Sure, he does. John C. Dvorak? Definitely.
No.
Leo Laporte is a programmer.
No, really?
Yeah.
Why is Leo Laporte's podcast doing so much better than ours?
Now that's an interesting question. The podcasts that I think are doing really well these days, that are really like smash hits, are all
they're
professional
all
journalists journalists and professional broadcasters. Leo Laporte from Tech TV days. He has been on the radio since he was probably on WYBC at Yale. So he's been a radio host for ages. John C. Dvorak obviously has been a journalist for years. Adam Curry was a VJ and is just a fantastic broadcaster, really, even though he's spouting crazy conspiracy theories.
But see, hang on a second here. Let me stop you.
Yeah.
People always say, blah, 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 Jones is an amazing radio host and doesn't really have any idea what he's talking about, spouts talking completely out of his ass, but a fantastic journalist and a great broadcaster.
Correct.
What does that mean? Does that mean that I'm a lousy broadcaster and a great technologist?
The both of us.
So what? But I cannot listen to these guys. God bless them. I just can't listen to them.
Where do you listen to a lot of podcasts? I mean, you work from home, so you don't have a
computer. Yeah, I mean, I understand that I enjoy doing this, and I want to take this to the next level. But, you know, Leo Laporte's got 185,000 followers on Twitter, and God knows, and he's always in the top, you know, like 8 of the top 10 iTunes things are his, and I'm on page 7. Now, I realize I'm talking about programming, but if I just, like, made up facts about edit this part of your registry in Windows, then that would somehow make the show more popular.
Hey, it's Alternate Universe Scott Hanselman. Going to thank our sponsors for making this free show possible. We've been doing Hansel Minutes for almost 4 years now, and we really couldn't do it without Telerik. So I want to tell you about some of the stuff they're working on. If you've already started developing with Silverlight, then you probably need a solid testing tool to do your Silverlight UIs. Unfortunately, though, a lot of the tools available today only help you with unit testing. There's not really a good way to simulate the actual behavior of those end users, unless you spend days and weeks doing a lot of manual testing. But the guys at Telerik have got a new point-and-click UI testing tool for Silverlight called Web UI Test Studio. And the beauty is that you can quickly record your tests with a cross-browser recorder. You can enrich them with code if you've got really complex scenarios. And on top of that, it supports all the standard controls as well as the Telerik enhanced controls. You can verify not only Silverlight, but even complex AJAX applications. Best part, Web UI Test Studio lives in Visual Studio, so you don't have to leave your favorite development environment. You can check it out at telerik.com/web-testing-tools. And be sure to thank Telerik for supporting the show on their Facebook fan page at facebook.com/Telerik.
Well, the other one who's always on the top of the iTunes list, or newly on, is Adam Carolla.
That's different. He's a nationally famous comedian and movie actor and TV actor.
But also most of what he's done has been, I mean, he's a comedian and a movie actor and TV actor and stuff like that, and nationally famous, true. But he brought his audience from his radio show, from a syndicated radio show. So he was like a slightly smaller than Howard Stern kind of person.
Mm-hmm.
What I think is going on, it's not that he brought an audience of a million people. It's not like if Oprah suddenly started podcasting, she would have 2 million people. In the case of Adam, Leo Laporte, Adam Curry, the other Adam, I think that these people are just pros that are trained in radio broadcasting.
Okay, so what does that mean?
What do they have that we don't have?
Pro. Yeah. I mean, I'm looking at his site on twit.tv. He's got 21 shows. He's got the production value down solid. He's probably got a team of editors.
Sure.
He's got that whole cartoon of the person who's on the show thing, like, nicely done. Everyone has their own little cartoon. I don't know who any of these people are.
Yeah. From listening to his shows, to Adam Carolla's shows, it's a little bit hard to say. One is, you know, Leo's a good interviewer.
Okay.
So.
Cause he's on every show. Right, that's the thing. It's
he's not on the network shows. No.
Well, I'm going on all these shows, like Munchcast. It's a food
show.
He's
on a lot of them,
and it's Cammie Blackstone and Leo Laporte.
He doesn't drive the shows except for Twit and maybe Mac Break and a couple of big ones. Once you get past the top two or three,
mm-hmm.
he's on there. But there's somebody else who's responsible for getting the guests, for leading the conversation, and so forth.
The other thing that's these shows are like are 90 minutes long.
Yeah, some of them are really long.
They're weekly.
They'll go 2 hours.
Yeah. I'm looking at this. Almost all of these shows are at least an hour, and they're every single week.
This is his whole job.
No, I get that.
And I think he sits there in the studio for 4-6 hours a day.
Just talking.
At least. Just talking, yeah. And that's not that odd. I mean, I'm sure Howard Stern does that much talking as well, and any popular, you know, radio personality.
That's amazing.
Terry Gross at NPR will do a 3-hour session to get fresh air.
To get 20 minutes?
And then the editor, Yeah. Oh. Well, no, Fresh Air is an hour, but she doesn't do the whole hour. Usually there's a half hour. I'm trying to think of it. For the Fresh Air format, usually there's like half hour to 40 minutes of her interviewing.
Okay.
And then sometimes there's somebody else comes on and like reviews a jazz album or something like that. So, but that comes out of like a 3-hour interview that she then hands over to editors and they work on it solid for a day to condense it into something good. And when you hear an interview on NPR, like a real NPR interview, like All Things Considered on Saturday morning with, you know, one of those Silvio Pezzoli type people.
I just know that Silvio Pezzoli is in Rome. That's all I know.
Yeah, she's the one in Rome. Who are some of the announcers? They're always, they're all the names
on which show?
Escaping me right now.
Weekend Edition?
Like All Things Considered or Weekend Edition.
ATC or, to our friends. On all, these are American TV shows, by the way, for folks that are
radio shows, National Public Radio. Yeah.
ATC, NPR. I don't know. Yeah, but they're all journalists. It's just different. Maybe that's the thing. Maybe I need to go to school.
They're journalists, and what they do is again, they do an
Robert
hour
Siegel.
Interview. Robert Siegel. Okay, so a Robert Siegel, you'll hear a 1-minute thing where it sounds like he's interviewing somebody for a minute, and it's the most amazing minute you ever heard.
Mm-hmm.
And that came out of an hour and a half interview that got edited to get the good parts.
You're saying this because you believe it or because you know it to be true?
No, because I know it to be true. That's how this is done.
Okay.
That is how this is done, Bobby. And that's why those things are, you know, they have that shiny pearl-like glow of a real piece of journalism that we're never going to have. But that's very different than Leo Laporte and Adam Carolla, who are from the radio world. And in the radio world, you've got 3 hours of air to fill, and that's your job, or 6 hours of air to fill.
Ah.
And you might have a guest in the studio and some people calling in, and you just need to blab and keep the conversation going.
Well, see, this is the thing. I'm so uncomfortable with that format. Remember that the whole point of Hansel Minutes was minutes. It's not the Hansel Hour. It's supposed to let people have something to do while they commute. And I'm looking here.
Okay, well, that's like, what you're filling time.
Well, I'm okay. The goal was not to waste anyone's time. It's to give you content and information, not
super
this show, but other shows.
Yeah.
Looking at this Twit show, it goes for an hour and 44 minutes this week. And the show is called Eat a Hot Bowl of Nintendo Wii's.
Which means that was a joke that somebody
said.
No,
I know. But it's like four guys and they just talk about stuff for the day.
You get no information whatsoever.
I just can't listen to the show.
The format of This Week in Tech, which is really interesting, because it is probably the number one tech podcast by leaps and bounds.
Yeah.
It's almost always journalists. He tries not to have guests on that are actually people doing things. And I think there's some reason for that, which I have to figure out, but it's almost always tech journalists of some sort. A lot of them, a lot of the recurring characters, are like the tech journalists for the Houston Chronicle or the Chicago Sun Times. He'll have obviously John C. Dvorak, who's from CBS Market Watch, I think, right now, and PC World, and a couple other. And they're all tech journalists, and they each bring in, they have some way of contributing kind of a list of what they think the big stories are that week.
Mm-hmm.
And then they just chat about them, but nobody prepares anything really. So they're not particularly prepared to say anything insightful or in depth about these things that they're talking about.
Yeah.
It's just opinion. You know, what do you think about, you know, Apple buying Google today?
It's definitely, I'm looking at, one of the things that they do that I like is this YouTube thing. They'll take their show and they'll record it and they'll put it on YouTube. So it's actually available in multiple.
Oh, like, it goes out in like every possible format. And that's a part of his method is that, first of all, you can watch the live stream and then there's a chat while you're watching
the live stream. That's pretty cool.
You can get it. The chat room is very nice because this is something we never had and you don't have either. But if you do it live and you have a chat room and later you can edit it into a real show, if there's something you don't know, you don't have to stop and Google it or anything like that. You don't have to interrupt the show. If you're like, what was the name of that person on All Things Considered? You say that and somebody in the chat room types it and it's just there. And you're
That's
like,
cool. And then you're actually watching it while it's being recorded, like it streams as well?
Yep. Yep.
Ah, that's pretty cool. I wonder who, like, they must be doing live editing, like director style editing, like a game show where it's like, go to camera three.
And, for the video, Leo Laporte has a TriCaster, which is basically a TV studio in a box. It's in a knapsack, I think they call it. It's the size of a small mixer. So, you know, maybe it's about 16 inches by 16 inches by 4 inches.
Mm-hmm.
And it sits on his desk. And it basically lets you switch from camera to camera. It lets you fade from camera to camera. It lets him bring in video from a PC or from a laptop or from a guest laptop.
That's cool.
It does all the bottom thirds, right? Like the captions.
Right, right.
So he's pushing buttons to get the names. And what's actually shocking is that Leo is doing that live while he's doing the show.
No, he's actually pushing the buttons himself. He doesn't have a person.
He's pushing the buttons. He doesn't have a person. So if you switch to a guest, a lot of times it's wrong because he'll lose interest and it'll be putting John C. Dvorak's name on a picture of, you know, somebody else, just because he's not keeping up with it. Now they have, Jason Calacanis has the same setup, but he's got a guy doing the TriCaster so he can just sort of sit there and look.
That's pretty cool. Interesting. Maybe I need to go on him. Maybe I need to be on his show. Maybe I should join his network of talking guys.
I don't know if you're not really quite a journalist. He really does like people that are, I mean, John Gruber would be the furthest afield he would get from somebody that's actually in some way doing journalism. And that's because he thinks of himself as being a news outlet like Tech TV or like a journalistic endeavor a little bit. He doesn't actually want it to be the people on the insides like us actually building stuff or working on stuff.
Yeah, I gotta go to journalism school. I don't know what a journalist does these days. When I think of journalist, I think of like that guy on ABC News, yeah. Brian Ross, right? That's a journalist. That's the guy where it's like, and now coming up with, like, literally my wife and I are like watching the news. Brian Ross is our big investigative journalist here in the U.S. and he'll go and he'll say, coming up next, Brian Ross. No, Brian, oh God, they sicked. Oh, I feel bad for the poor schmuck that they've sucked Brian up. They've sent Brian Ross after. Guy's a pit bull, whatever. You know, if he knocks on your door, it's over.
Yeah.
That's a journalist. You know what I'm saying?
Camped out on your. Well, I don't know if they would go that far, but these are definitely watchers, not doers. And I sometimes that's good and sometimes it's bad. And it's got its pros and cons. But there is something, there are skills that I can see how it would take a decade of radio broadcasting to learn them. Because in the old days, you didn't get to be. The anchorman on CBS Evening News without having spent, you know, the first 10 years of your life doing a crappy radio show where you played 45 singles and then announced them. And then the next 5 years, maybe moving up to being the sports news guy with 1 minute of sports news at the end of the news on the top of every hour at a big station in Albuquerque, you know, KOB, 50,000 watts. Reaches 500,000 people. That's a big market. And then you might move to the Chicago market and then suddenly you're kind of the news reporter there. And after about 20 or 25 years, you had enough radio experience that people just want to listen to you talk somehow. You know, I mean, it's like Howard Stern, right? Could anybody just make a show and interview strippers and, you know, say outrageous things?
That is a very good question.
And just have a woman on the show whose job is to laugh. Could anybody do that and the formula would work? Mm-hmm. Or is there also something about he's learned how to speak to a microphone by doing it for 6 hours a day for 10 years that has made him in some way an expert that makes people want to listen to him?
Interesting. So you're bored with your show, though. So all of that, this is very interesting because bringing it back full circle, Leo talks in the microphone successfully for 4 to 6 hours every day. And you're tired of podcasting.
For decades. Yeah. And because, first of all, I'm not going to have the devotion. It's not my number one thing by far. So I'm not going to have the devotion and the dedication to sit around and do to do this to the point where I can actually be even Adam Curry's funny, right? Because his show, if you ever listen to it, it's all about the stupidest conspiracy theories in the world. And you listen to it and you're just like, I cannot believe that Adam Curry got this far in life and he believes this nonsense about, you know, that the 9/11 was created by the U.S. government or whatever. And yet, it is so obvious that he is better at speaking into a microphone than I am by leaps and bounds, you know, like a million times better.
But he's been doing it since he was 18 or something.
Right. Right.
I see.
And he probably had some talent to whatever that is, some kind of linguistic talent. I mean, he grew up in Holland and moved to America, and he probably switched from Dutch to English at exactly the right age. So he has absolutely no accent in English or in Dutch.
Are you making this up, or did this really happen?
Huh? Yeah, no, this is true. And it was probably at exactly the right age that gave him sort of a fluency with language that is like above and beyond what mono, like one language speakers would have.
I'm sorry.
What?
Just... You're actually talking about fluency with language and how important it is, and you're like, it's like much better how like mono, like people who talk
monolingual
like,
speakers,
people who talk good,
people who. There's no question that bilingual, that genuinely bilingual.
Oh, believe me, my wife speaks English much more better than I do.
Yeah. And I learned Hebrew a little bit too late. If I had moved to Israel probably like 2 years earlier, I would probably be a better English speaker.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I think it is with, yeah, I mean, I don't want to say that's why I'm crying, but there may be innate, you know, manners of innate talent there.
I
think Adam Carolla is a little bit different because he's a comedian, and comedians, learn certain, sketches that they just repeat again and again and again. So with Adam Carolla, you're like, you know, give me the rant about the Mexican lawnmower gardener dude. And he's got a rant prepared that he said 700 times, and he's optimized and he's timed it, and he's given the same rant 700 times. And every time it gets a little bit better, a little bit funnier, a little bit smoother. And he just sort of does that continuously, tells those stories continuously again and again and again and again.
Well, so I'm not sure, but we may have just recorded a half an hour that we could just call the Sour Grapes Show.
This is probably the worst podcast ever. Remember the podcast you and me and Jeff and Roy did?
That was a really horrible podcast.
This is worse.
I think this may be awful. This is very interesting. So I don't know Leo Laporte personally, but I know that Leo probably did not make it 35 minutes into this show because he's busy actually producing 21 shows himself that are 10 times each one.
Do you want me to try to arrange a visit where you and I go to his place in California, Northern California, and just visit him and watch him do some shows and stuff?
That would be cool.
All right, I'll try to arrange that.
Because we're like, we're down here kind of in the, you know, we're in the bottom of the food chain podcast-wise. We should, rather than sitting around talking about all the things that we're not able to do and picking on Leo, we should just go and find out how he's doing it. Because this is the thing. You can't argue with success.
No.
Right? I was in a presentation recently, and I was talking about Stack Overflow and some of the stuff technology-wise that you guys were doing that I thought was weird. But the thing is, you're succeeding, so who am I to complain?
Well, what happens is the technology is the second order bit, right? There's a higher order bit there that makes Stack Overflow successful.
Right.
It's the same thing with podcasts. You know how good our audio quality is, and we're really good at that relative to some other shows. Remember the Gilmore Gang,
mm-hmm.
which had, I mean, in that case, who cares how good the content was? It was so impossible to listen to.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was a show where everybody would call into a conference call and the first 15 minutes would be dead air with just background noises and Steve Gilmore like yelling at a taxi driver because he was phoning in the show from a cell phone in a taxi in New York City. And the first 15 minutes, and you'd be like, how could anybody possibly listen to this? This is inconceivable that anybody could listen to this show. So they have managed to have such bad audio quality that dominated everything else. But in most cases, it's really the content, not the audio quality. And if you have a good guest calling in via phone, it's going to easily trump a boring guest, you know, who's right there in the studio with you or calling in via Skype or whatever, better form of audio they have. So that's really the high order bit. And it's the same thing with code. Whereas as technologists and programmers, we constantly obsess about, you know, what programming language should I use and which library should I use and what object-oriented framework should I use and what, you know, now it's gone beyond that to debates over whether I should use inversion of control containers and which ones and should I use n-hibernate or, and what are all those choices for different ways of accessing your database in ASP.NET? And that is definitely like the fourth bit, right? That's the fourth order bit, in the success of your product.
Hmm.
That was one of those speeches that makes our podcast so boring.
I think so. Well, it's an interesting idea. I enjoy doing the show, and I've always said in the past that I'm not blogging for, you know, success. I'm not blogging for. I'm certainly not blogging for the Google ad money because there's not much of that. Same thing with the podcast. It's a labor of love, and I know that labor of love is a cliche, but it is. We've done 200 plus shows, and I'll keep doing it as long as at least one person's listening to it. So,
all right.
I wish Leo certainly all the best, but I'd love to know some of his tricks to get a wide audience. He's definitely succeeding. Do you think you're going to do your show? Kind of in closing, do you think you're going to just stop, or what are you going to do with the show?
I don't want to repeat myself too much. And the original idea of the show was we're building this new thing, Stack Overflow. Let's just sort of record the genesis of that. Because it was neat that Jeff and I were in different cities, and so we had to have regular phone calls to kind of keep in touch and build that. And I sort of thought it would cost us nothing to hit the record button while we were doing that,
mm-hmm.
and somebody would probably want to listen to that. And unfortunately, over time, what happened is that we became kind of – whenever you do – you know, we're the kind of people, and I'm sure you are too, that whenever you're doing something, whether you're doing it for fun or professionally, you want to get better and better at it, and you want every version to be like a little bit better. And so we started – you know, I started worrying about how to improve the audio of the podcast, and our gear got more and more esoteric as the audio got better and better. And, you know, we started having guests, and we started just trying to think about how to make it better and better. And eventually it was the way to make it better would be to make that my job, right? To spend more time on it, to practice more. This podcast, so we've been recording for, I don't know, 40 minutes or so now, 42 minutes. If we go for another hour, you can probably edit this down to a much better 30-minute show. But, you know, who's got time? I've got, you know, stuff to do. It's not my number one priority. It's my number three priority. So that's why it's sort of hard for me to decide what to do about this Stack Overflow podcast.
Well, I think the point about making it your job is the trick. This is not my job. This isn't even a Microsoft thing. It's just something that Carl and I did on the, you know, kind of do on the side that my boss tolerates.
I was wondering about that. Does your boss not expect you to do that? I mean, you're doing remarkable evangelism work for Microsoft.
Yeah, I hate that word.
Through Hansel Minutes.
I hate that word.
Well, what's a better word?
I don't know. I'd rather be a customer advocate. I'm kind of the Ralph Nader of .NET, maybe. Except insane.
Yeah.
The
customer advocate implies that you're taking customer things and moving the customer information from customers and moving it into the company.
Yes, that is actually
right. Evangelism implies.
Right. Yes.
But I mean, Hanselman, if you cover some obscure inversion of control container that somebody is working on at Microsoft, that really is taking inside ideas from Microsoft.
Yeah. I mean, technically, the show is about things I'm interested in. Like, I've had engineers from Sun on, and I've had, you know, just the show is not, I mean, every once in a while, if some cool thing comes out, you know, a Visual Studio. I should do a show on Visual Studio. But it's not like, I mean, like someone has called in the past and said, hey, we have this new obscure thing. Will you have us on your show? And I'll say, you know, that's just not really how this works. I mean, if it tickles my, I'll look at it. And if it's cool, if it's awesome, I'll check it out. But I don't have people on the show that I don't believe about. And that's why the blog is on my servers and it has my disclaimer and my copyright, and the podcast is the same. And it's like I had, what was his name? I had Charles Petzold on, right?
Yeah.
You know, and
that was good. That was a good episode. Yeah.
And he's like saying all sorts of stuff that Microsoft people wouldn't say. You know, he was like, oh yeah, the Windows phone's got a black screen because it's got better battery life. You know, that's the kind of stuff you can't get from a Microsoft program manager sometimes.
Huh.
But you will get from, you know, an old dude with a beard.
Right.
And those are the kind of people I'd rather have on the show. I don't want this to ever be like a mouthpiece. And that's why.
No, absolutely.
That's why
absolutely.
We control it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know. Do you think that you want to be on a podcast like every once in a while? And like you still have something to say? We should actually ask the audiences, because maybe they'll just say like in the comments, like, that was Spolsky's farewell show. We never want to hear from him again.
Well, I've already decided that that I wanted to pull back from the being a public persona.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, in the case of blogging, where I basically said, listen, I've done 10 years of being a pundit, and I've actually gotten to the point where the value I'm providing to the world through insightful ideas is now exceeded by the annoyance that people feel when I open my mouth. Like, those two things for a while were in balance. Everybody was like, oh, that's an interesting idea. Oh, that's another interesting idea. Oh, that's a great idea. And it's like, all right, too many ideas, Joel, shut up. And then, well, eventually one of those surpasses the other. And, bizarro celebrity in the tiny niche world of programmers that listen to podcasts and read blogs, which mm-hmm. is already a small subset of programmers, which is already a small subset of the world. But I'm enough of a celebrity in that weird, bizarre niche that, it's actually a little bit irritating to me. And I was trying to kind of pull it back a little bit and try to influence the world, in other ways, having done that for a while,
well,
in a particular way.
In closing, Jeff told me a story I thought was kind of cool. It may be one of those things that's like in the Apocrypha, but he said that you guys were at an airport somewhere wearing Stack Overflow t-shirts. Yeah. What happened?
We were wearing, during the Stack Overflow dev days, Jeff Atwood and I were at the San Francisco airport wearing Stack Overflow shirts that we got made up for the show. So it was like a white Oxford shirt with Stack Overflow logo. And a kid who looked like he was 20, but he was wearing a suit because it was like a college kid on his way to a job interview or something, comes by to us and he's like, oh my God, you guys are from Stack Overflow? And I can't remember exactly what I said, but I'm like, yeah, you know, I'm Joel Spolsky. This is Jeff Atwood. And he's like, who? And he showed absolutely no sign of ever having heard those names before. And we're like, yeah, we're the co-founders of Stack Overflow. And he finally said, oh, yeah, okay, that's cool. I like that site. And Mike from Reddit was there. And we're like, and this is Mike from Reddit. And they're like, oh, I like Reddit even more.
And that's really what it's about, right? It's not about the person. It's about what the person puts out there.
Joel on software, regularly, my standard audience, I used to say, if I were to write a big blog post, I would get anywhere from 100,000 to 1 million people reading it. And 1 million was a really big one. 100,000 is probably the number of people that would have read that thing eventually by the time it made its way through all the various different sites. And after about a month or two, about 100,000 for a typical, major blog post where I'm actually thinking of something and writing about it. And, Stack Overflow regularly reaches 7 million people a month.
That's awesome.
So that's it's just a different scale altogether. It's a much larger scale. There's no possible way that all those people know who I am, and we're reaching them kind of with a different kind of information altogether. I'm not telling you programmers should have private offices. I'm telling you if you're calling the blah 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 Windows API function and the third argument is null, even though the documentation said that was okay, and you're getting a crash 3 days later, here's why. And for the 15 people that have that problem, that's the information that we're getting them. So it's a very different kind of way of sharing knowledge, I think. Let's put it that way.
All right. This has been another episode of the Stack Overflow Hansel Minutes podcast.
This is our second joint podcast.
Our second joint podcast. Yeah. And we'll see you. Brought to you by
IT Conversations.
Brought to you by Leo Laporte at Twit TV.
This week in Stack Overflow Minutes.
All right. Thanks, Joel, for hanging out with me.
Sure. Nice talking to you, Scott.
All right. Catch you later.